Yes, that took a long time because to tell you the story, because those first years were so traumatic and so eventful in various ways. I mean, several countries, 6 languages, all before 11, at age 11.
And I mean, that's part of why I was curious to know how you transitioned to something that became stable, right? You weren't moving around, you weren't in countries where your people were hated.
So,
and
I did not own a book until, I remember the first book. My parents gave it to me in the United States.
You remember which one?
No, I don't remember the book, but I remember the occasion because I had my tonsils out. So this was a operation which was overdone in our time. Whenever a kid had chronic colds or something, they took their tonsils out. It was an operation, and I got some book as I was recovering. I remember that. And I was then in 7th grade, so I must have been around 13 or something like that. We carried along some precious photos and some other things, but by and large, one moved, maybe one learned not to be attached too much, because I move from one place, I lose all my friends. And I'm not sure that the effect is all that good, but I don't want to indulge in pop psychology. There is an interesting question, what were the effects of that hiding? And there are some things I can point to. To this day, I remain afraid of people in uniform. Even if the uniforms are harmless, I mean doormen in an apartment building. If they're wearing a uniform, somehow there's some scary thing. And I remember, I'm also afraid of standing in front of a window at night, because I think it's some weird thing about that window in a place that we were hiding. And outside was danger. And inside there was a lot of love. I've sometimes said it was a cocoon of love. But outside was infinite danger. Unusual things. So about chemistry, let me just trace a little bit.
Right, and I was also curious to know what your, you mentioned that you didn't do advanced chemistry in high school,
right.
I was wondering, what were the science classes like? Was it just standard learning from textbooks? Were you doing experiments? And I'm also partly curious because I know that the 1950s, you know, the U.S. is really ramping up their investment in science, and I think you were...
Yes.
I forget the exact year, but... I mean,
so 51 to 55, I'm in Stuyvesant High School.
Right. That's Sputnik. Sputnik.
And 55 to 58, I'm at Columbia College. The dates are also important with respect to another thing I'll mention. The science classes were routine, except that the advanced placement courses were not routine. They were very demanding at the high school. The normal courses, but there was nothing special about them. The advanced placement courses were very good. So part of the situation here is that we have teachers who are, some of them have PhDs in high school, and they were PhDs in the subject. I had a teacher in English, and I had a biology and a math teacher who had PhDs. Those men had found those jobs during the Depression, and they couldn't get other jobs. And there was teaching. We owe those great teachers to the Depression. Dr. Brody in math, Astrakhan in English. The advanced placement courses were exceptional. It's not that the laboratories were, well, the laboratory was only in biology. Biology course was lots of fun. I was very attracted to the biology. There was the usual kinds of things, a dissection of a fetal pig, let's say, that you do in an advanced biology course, of a frog and a fetal pig. And the chemistry lab was not particularly well equipped. Rather interesting, the daughter of one of those chemistry teachers works for, or used to work for, Chemical Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now what is her name? It'll come to be in just a moment. But he was not a good teacher, so we won't mention that. In college, the courses were routine. And I did not have a really exciting chemistry course in college till my last third year. I moved at a rapid pace through the courses. I was 18, and I was old at 18 to start college, because in New York City in those days, you could skip grades, and I had classmates who were 15 and 16 when they started Columbia. And I was somewhat in a hurry. Also, my stepfather, as I mentioned, was unemployed. There was some, and I took 25 credits a semester, and I took one summer course, and I graduated in 3 years from Columbia. In my last year at Columbia, I finally had an introduction, a good chemistry course, a course in statistical mechanics, and an introduction to chemical physics, and I think they were the ones that lured me into theory.
And by whom?
Two people whose names are not very well known today. The introduction to chemical physics was George Franco, and the statistical mechanics course was by Ralph Halford. I also sat in on a course by a leading theoretical chemist, George Kimball. There is a textbook, Irene Walter and Kimball, which of quantum chemistry, but the course was not about quantum chemistry. What kept me going, interest in chemistry, were summer jobs, which began with between high school and college and continued for the next 3 years. So there were 2 years in Washington at the National Bureau of Standards, and then there were 2 years at Brookhaven. And out of those came my first two published papers. So they had a significance in my life. The first paper was on the thermochemistry of a compound in cement, in Portland cement. And the second paper was on a low-level counting system for carbon 11 produced in an accelerator at Brookhaven. I went on to work in neither of those fields. And the science in the first paper, which was published in Journal of Research, National Bureau of Standards, the second one I'm proud of because it's published in Review of Scientific Instruments. I'll never publish anything there again in my life. They were experimental papers. The two National Bureau of Standards, the first was cement compounds. This is calorimetry of cement compounds. Boring stuff in retrospect, but it was new to me. The second was a much more interesting program the Bureau of Standards had about pyrolysis, low temperature, relatively low temperature pyrolysis of hydrocarbons. So you take propane and you heat it up to 300, 400 below the flash point in the presence of oxygen, and you look at incipient chain reactions that you later see in flames. it was very interesting. Introduced me to gas chromatography, for instance, for the first time. At Brookhaven, I did radiochemistry both summers with some very good people. Those were things were much more interesting than the courses. Meanwhile, at Columbia, the world opens up to me in Columbia has a core curriculum, so this is one of these American things where there are certain courses where everyone takes. There's one called Contemporary Civilization, another one called Humanities. Humanities is a selection of great works of literature from throughout the ages. Contemporary Civilization is about philosophy and political ideas. So you read everything from the Greek philosophers to Hegel and Kant, a little bit in excerpts. It's actually very nice. Then there was history, art, history, music. The world opened up in literature and the arts, especially in history of art, where I had a wonderful teacher, and I took then two more courses. I took a poetry course, that was my first exposure to poetry. I took a great books course, a seminar where we read 100 great books in a year. I took, as I said, two history of art courses. Now, around the first year, I told my parents I didn't want to be a doctor. So then there was a question, what was I going to be? All this humanities stuff was so interesting. It really was intellectually interesting. I just didn't have, I read some good books, quote unquote, in high school. That was part of being in Stuyvesant, but I don't think they meant that much to me. Maybe it was also, I think I was just more mature and I was more open to novels and poetry. So there's an interesting story there that has to do with European education versus American. Often in a European education, if a person did go through a gymnasium or lycée in a classical education, they would have been exposed to some good literature in the old days, at least. And so that has been used as an excuse not to give European science students a liberal arts education equivalent at the university, so they could enter medical school at age 18 or chemistry and take only chemistry courses. I think there is a world of difference between reading Anna Karenina at age 16 and reading it at age 20. By age 20, you've fallen in love, and you know what that means. And the maturity, the rise in maturity is very, very high. So I really benefited from an American liberal arts education. And these things stuck with me, the history of art and the poetry. I did not try to write poetry at that. The man who taught us, there were no writing courses. The man who taught us, Mark Van Doren, a great teacher, taught the Beat Poets. Ginsberg was one of his students. He could not teach us to write a poem. If you wanted to learn writing, you went to the evening school of Columbia University, the School of General Studies. What a world of difference from your time already in today, where there are writing courses all through college.
Right.
Nothing like that in that time. He taught me how to read a poem, and I remember the first poem, which was Wallace Stevens' Sunday Morning, and that had a tremendous impact on me at the time. I think if I did not feel a family responsibility to have a profession, that I would have gone into history of art. I felt I wanted to get a profession, Now comes, I told you in high school, I knew I wasn't going to be a mathematician. In college, for the wrong reasons, I decided I couldn't be a physicist because I had these friends who took physics courses, and I got an A and they got an A plus. And to them it came easy and I had to struggle. And so I decided I wasn't good enough for physics. Now I'm doing physics. I'm publishing in Phys Rev Letters and Phys Rev B. And of course I was wrong, because what I mistook was doing well in courses for doing a kid doesn't know what research is like.
So when you were, was this before you had gone to the NBS in Brookhaven that you were having?
I was going at the same time.
Okay. I think you worked with E.S. Newman on thermochemistry and
that's right.
Ferguson on the
yes.
pyrolysis.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what you were learning about the research life and laboratory life from those experiences, since what you learn in college is very different from...
Very different. So first I learned what I liked what I learned. The first person I worked with, Newman, did not have a PhD. He was doing calorimetry all his life. He did publish. I remember clearly, how could I forget? I remember the big mistake I made in there. There was a calorimeter. The calorimeter, you know, it's the usual thing. You take the substance, you put it in, you react it with water inside a platinum enclosure, and then you measure how the temperature rises in there very precisely. Well, you have to know the amount of material, and I forgot in the calculation to subtract the weight of the calorimeter. And that platinum is pretty dense, so that I was getting this something way off, and he corrected me gently. So I learned how to do careful experimental work, which I haven't done since. Did I learn to appreciate experiment? Not there, later on. The second one, the pyrolysis of hydrocarbons, that was good physical chemistry at this time. And I learned a little organic then. No publication came from that. Ferguson went on to be a director of the National Bureau of Standards, and he was a good person. He had a PhD. At Brookhaven, I was in the presence of some people who were really good in their fields. There was Julian Miller at Columbia, Jim Cumming, who was my supervisor directly, and the head of the group was Gert Friedlander, who was a German-trained radiochemist, a very good person. And I learned something about doing good experimental work. I learned also a little mathematics of distribution of radioactivity, radioactive decay. Any of these later, but I think also the act of publication was enthralling to see that I could have a paper published. Your first paper means a lot to you. So those were my first two papers. Those people were all important to me. But I still would have become a historian of art, I think.
Okay.
So I didn't think I was good enough with physics. The interesting thing was that I didn't even pay any attention to biology. And now we have to get the date. So now I'm 55 to 58. 53 is the Watson and Crick paper. That's the important thing. I think had I been exposed to Watson and Crick, I might have become a molecular biologist. But first of all, Columbia's biology department, and that was true of every biology department, molecular biology didn't come through in one day and conquer these places. They were staffed by classical biologists, and though I think I would have taken to natural history type biology too. There were things here at Cornell I learned which were intellectually very attractive. But I didn't. I think I didn't even take a biology course because I was so against medicine that I didn't even take a biology course.
When have you heard first of Linus Pauling?
At that time, Columbia, in my third year. No, sorry. He wrote the textbook I used in my first year, the general chemistry textbook. Those beautiful drawing by Hayward or someone. Beautiful. This is a general chemistry textbook. I still have the book. This first year. In my senior year, my third year, so I got on 3 years. My third year, I took a seminar. There were modern organic chemists at Columbia. First, there was Gilbert Stork, though he was very synthetic. Had I been exposed to synthetic, I keep saying these things, had I been exposed to, I would have become that. I just said it about Watson and Crick. But I also think about synthetic organic chemistry, that had I had a really good organic, inspiring organic introduction, and I'm not sure Stork is capable of doing that, because he's a great teacher at an advanced level, but not necessarily at the beginning level. Incidentally, I studied the textbook in a rather, in the good but routine course, was Fieser and Fieser. And I remember, Karsten, to this day, like everyone else who studied from that book, not so much the book or the style, but the little historical biographies that are in there. And there is here something about history. Those little biographies were 3 lines typically,
mm-hmm.
about famous chemists when he introduced the name reaction. Let's stop for a moment.